Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
G'day and welcome to The Call, 10 stocks picked by you, two experts, 1 hour. It is Tuesday, the 23rd of April. I'm Andrew Gagan. Great to have you with us here at AusBiz. Our two experts on the show today, Ben Richards from Seneca Financial Solutions. In fact, the first time on the show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
And, well, an old hand as well, Rudy Philippic van Dyke from FN Arena. Rudy, good to see you.
For the second time on the show in April.
Yeah, no one's believing you. That's not a good start of the show, is it? All right, let's get a look at what's going on in the market. Plenty, it would seem. Something of a relief rally over the last session or two, given we saw those... what has been a difficult time for the market over the past couple of weeks. All right, in fact, let me first go to what stocks are going to take a look at in the first half of the show. There we go. Domino's, Endeavour Group, IDP, Education, Corporate Travel, and NextDC. So, to the local market. Rudy, what are your observations? As I said, a bit of a relief rally going on at the moment. I do notice gold stocks hit heavily today. How are you feeling about the market? And I might ask you about what you're feeling about gold, given it's obviously rallied hard. Are we going to see a significant pause or perhaps a bit of a step lower?
Not necessarily, no. Let's do the market first. I mean, I haven't been too worried about the market. It actually has pulled back more than I thought this month than I would have expected. But I guess we also had some chest thumping in Asia, and that always increases the risk that we would see more than simply fewer rockets flying here and there. I think that's being priced out this week. I think the market is getting more comfortable with whatever is happening between Iran and Israel. That's the market side.
Right.
Gold has confused and confounded many people this year, because on the usual theory of falling inflation, higher bond yields, etc., gold should be lower here, and gold often trades as an anti-equities asset. But central banks keep buying, and we can all come to theories why that is. But I think, I mean, the old rule is when something is negative and the asset doesn't fall, that can only be a positive. So I'm actually with the positivos here. I actually think we will see higher gold prices this year.
You buying gold? Are you buying gold stocks?
I have allocated already quite a position in my portfolio.
Two.
And did that about 18 months ago. It's equivalent of a stock. It's about 5 or 6%.
Okay.
And I couldn't help but noticing one of the largest fund managers in Europe today put out a statement. They believe that every portfolio should have between 5 and 10% in gold.
Ben, do you agree?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, gold. I mean, the price is going bananas, but a lot of the WA miners still aren't probably making the cash flow that they should be, particularly kind of struggling with cost inflation and, you know, grade decline, all the usual things that miners have to battle with. Look, we've kind of erred on the side of caution in terms of gold miners themselves. You know, we own picks and shovels style businesses that do have broader based exposure to the gold price. But yeah, I think Rudy hit the nail on the head in terms of the central bank buyings, pretty strongly supporting the gold price. So we'll see if that continues.
Indeed, we will. All right, well, let's...
It's probably also worth...
Yep.
I was talking about gold and not necessarily about the gold miners. Two different assets.
Well, I did ask you whether you're actually have any stake in that.
It's in gold.
Okay,
so not in gold miners.
Yep.
Different risk profile.
All right. Why not?
It's a different risk profile.
Yeah.
Right? And for the reason that Ben just points out, gold cannot have margin pressure or cost overruns or delayed production or hit by the rain, right? That's for the miners. And that we've all seen that now over the past 2 years.
Yep.
The miners are really struggling to keep up with expectations.
All right, so that is the view of gold, which is one of the, well, it's the poorest performing sector or subsector, I should say, on today's market. But let's get into our stock of the day. It is Brambles, reporting 7% sales revenue growth, increasing to $7.4 billion in the first 9 months of the year on its third quarter trading update. Also reporting underlying profit growth between 13 and 15% in constant currency and positive free cash flow before dividends of up to $800 million US dollars. The pallet and logistics company reconfirming its FY24 guidance with sales revenue growth of between 6 and 8% and underlying profit growth of between 13 and 15%. What did the market think of that? Well, in fact, I was going to bring you the chart, but the shares have suffered today on the local market. In fact, they are off close to 5% in today's trade. Rudy, Brambles, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, two observations, and this is in extension of the US as well. Companies that report results tend to get a weaker share price. We've seen the same thing with the likes of NetWealth, Hub24. Market sentiment is quite, it's negative actually, outside of the pricing out of war risks. The market is not very positive on companies' commercial results. Even though if you look at those results, there's nothing wrong with them at face value. Clearly the market was hoping for an upgrade in their guidance, which hasn't come through. But as an investor, you just sometimes, if you own it, you just have to take this on the chin and have to realize that investing is about longer term, not in the immediate here and now. If you look at the numbers and you look at the fact that if you take a longer term view, that Brambles has had a period when they were quite struggling and for quite a while, and they're now sort of like making a comeback. And if you believe that comeback has further to run, which I think is but logical to assume, then this could be one of those stocks that you have in your portfolio for the non-spectacular but steady part that gives a little bit of a backbone in your portfolio. And you can also refer to it as defensives, basically. Defensives doesn't mean that they don't fall, but it does mean that when times get tough, they sometimes give you that extra oomph in your portfolio, which otherwise you won't have if you only have idly diddly piddly microcaps in your portfolio, because they do fall. So on that perspective, I think you could at the very least own Brambles, but I think you can buy it today as well. If that's that particular part of the portfolio needs a little bit of extra additions, allocation.
So
but I wouldn't think any spectacular things from Brambles. That's not the type of company. But right, steady as she goes, yes, absolutely.
All right, but at these levels, you'd be prepared to buy it.
Absolutely, yes. And it's, I mean, at the very least, it's 5% cheaper than it was on Friday.
Yep.
Great to buy.
It's all relative, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, Ben, Brambles.
Yeah, I mean, in the short term, trading update looks like they're a risk to miss the top of guidance, according to the broking community at least. In the long term, yeah, I mean, it's a defensive, it's a boring business. Pallets, crates, containers, their end markets, are they going to grow it faster than GDP? I would expect probably not. And in terms of the longer term picture, it earnings have kind of gone nowhere since it listed 20 years ago, paid some dividends along the way, of course. But you know, EBIT has only increased at 2.6% CAGR over 10 years. So look, we think there's probably better opportunities. If you're a yield investor, it only yields 3.5%, partially franked. So look, I don't see too many reasons to own Brambles at the moment.
Would you hold it though?
I would say it's a sell just based on other opportunities.
Fantastic. Well, there we go. We've got a market right there for Brambles. Rudy's buying, Ben is selling. You guys can meet after the show. All right, let's take a look at the first stock as picked by you. It is Domino's. It is picked by Tim. Of course, deals with pizzas, or, well, I guess, originally called itself a tech firm, so I guess you could call them widgets, in fact. Look, it has struggled recently, of course, in particular, dogged by some of its businesses or franchises overseas. did recently have an investor briefing where it targeted 7-9% annual organic store growth, although I think the many of the brokers saying that's going to be difficult to achieve, particularly in FY25, with focus particularly on its businesses in Japan and France seem as unlikely to unlock in the near term. Ben, what's your view on Domino's?
Yeah, I mean, it's come back a long way in terms of the share price and the trading multiple. I was listening to the strategy day run by the CEO last week, which shares kind of got hit by, as you can see on the chart there. And he said 18 minutes is the cutoff for delivering a pizza, which will impact their net promoter score. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, in the kind of the high growth era of Domino's, when they were the main player doing this, the fastest, cheapest takeaway option, if you just want to, you know, not think about what you're getting and just get a good feed in you, then it's probably the go-to option. But what we've seen in the last couple of years is the franchisees have been making less money. The expansion overseas has been a bit troubled, particularly, as you mentioned, in places like Japan. And what's worked on them on the way up for them in terms of, you know, if the franchisee is making money, it's pretty easy to roll out new stores. It's kind of working in reverse on the way down. And that's not to say that it's a, you know, it's been a good performing business, well run over the longer term, but, you know, it was on 50, 60 times earnings, and pizza tech, they were trying to play the technology angle. Mm. I've always been a skeptic of that. You know, it's probably down to a level now where I think it's getting to probably about fair value. I reckon it's probably worth somewhere between $30 and $35. We actually own Collins Foods in our large cap portfolio at Seneca. It's a little bit cheaper. It's probably not as kind of explosive growth. Historically, it's a bit more stable, but it's kind of in the same space there. So I'll call it a sell. Prefer Collins Foods.
Right. You're saying 18 minutes to deliver a pizza. Is that from the moment you order it to the moment it lands on your front door?
I believe so.
Gee whiz. I don't know. I think I've tested that.
It's pretty impressive. But, you know, in the age of Uber Eats and all the rest of it, I suppose maybe their advantage is kind of being slowly eroded by the driver delivery network. I'm not a regular consumer myself, no. I'll admit, Andrew.
No, I can't say I am either. All right, okay. So, as you say, you got to sell on it. You do prefer Collins Foods in that space. Rudy?
I've never ordered a Domino's pizza.
Really? Just to at least try it, to try out the business?
Still a virgin.
As an investor?
Oh, I can walk in and look what it looks like. There we go. I haven't ordered one ever. Silly people say silly things. When they were trading on the high multiples, it didn't make them a technology stock. It made them just a high quality stock on the high multiple. That's all. To my surprise, and it took me a while to figure this one out as well, they're basically having the backlash from the COVID era. They made the wrong investments during COVID, thinking that their initial success in Japan was there for the longevity. And they're now basically in trouble. They've overinvested in Japan. Long story short, I'm always of the view that, I mean, we can't say that they will never get their mojo back again, but it might take a long while from here before they work through. And I've always been very skeptical, having lived in Europe myself, how much pizza the French will continue consuming. I mean, they like other stuff. Long story short, I think you don't need to be there when companies go through these very tough periods, and so I would not go there. And if I would do that irrespectively of the share price, because if they disappoint again in June, then whatever looks cheap will become cheaper. I think at the moment you don't have to be there unless you're really confident they get their act together and there's no more bad news coming. And that in that case, you might be taking more risk than your portfolio can bear. So I wouldn't be there. Avoid.
So if you own it, then what would you sell?
Well, yes, I would. In particular now, share prices have come down. Yep. There's a lot of other share prices that offer much better, much lower risk profiles, much better returns.
All right. Well, let's call that a double sell then. So a very negative outlook there for Domino's. Let's move on to, well, perhaps if you are ordering a pizza, you might want to drink with it. you might want to head to Endeavour Group. As a result, that's our next stock. Obviously in the hotels and also the retail space in terms of liquor, although does potentially have some issues to deal with in its hotels business, particularly with the pokies, so the regulatory issues I'm talking about there. So that may derail some of their outlook. I did see an uplift though in earnings from hotels. Rudy, what are yours?
Endeavour? My favorite pub does offer that option that you stay in the pub and you can get your pizza from across the street, which does not come from Domino's.
Yeah. Well, they don't make it in-house?
No, they do. They do it with the restaurants across the street, and they have very nice Belgian beers. The risk of regulatory action has actually been priced in now in Endeavour Group. That's why the share price is where it is. So you're not buying them on a very high premium here, and it's basically a similar story as with Brambles. I mean, alcohol consumption is pretty much ingrained in society here. It's predominantly an Australian story. Are there risks? There are always risks, but in the very same respect, I think they're also thinking of potentially spinning off some of the real estate assets they have, and they have a lot of them. So there could be a REIT with other benefits coming from it. Long story short, again, I think you're closer to Brambles here than you are to Domino's. This is essentially a defensive, steady as she goes. I mean, the dividend is there, the franking is there. Every once in a while they've gone through the COVID backlash and they're now, I mean, looking forward to steady growth. All right. Pick your pick. I mean, you need defensive in your portfolio. Not everyone's a runner. Not everyone's in the team to score goals. Sometimes you need someone to prevent the other party from scoring goals. This is that type of stock. So you can buy it.
You can buy it at these levels. Yep. So particularly given you're saying that regulatory risk is priced in. Okay, Ben.
Yeah, I think the retail side of it's really good business. Its margins are a lot higher than competitors. It makes up the bulk of sales, but the gaming in the pokey side of it is quite profitable. So the retail is about 60% of operating profits versus the hotels at 40%. So if I was owning it just for the retail alone, Dan's BWS, I'd probably say it's bordering on buy. But just sort of speaking to people familiar with the business, it seems like that regulatory scrutiny that the pokies are under is an issue. It's just not a risk that we'd be kind of comfortable taking to buy the stock. Having said that, I think it's largely in the price by now. And yeah, you do need defensives in the portfolio. I'll call it a hold.
Does it make sense to split the business?
Potentially. I think there's always noise around these kind of businesses where you also get a bit of an asset backing. So the value of their hotels from a property standpoint is also attractive, and you can kind of split the risks and the investor base will pursue the appropriate split as they see fit. But it doesn't always work. I mean, look at Ramsay Healthcare. They talked about spinning out the property, attracted a bit of interest from a takeover perspective. It all fell over. Business isn't going that well and the share price suffered. So, you know, sometimes these things can work. I think it makes sense, but you know, it's not without its risks.
Okay, all right. So a buy and a hold there for Endeavour Group. Onto our third stock. It is IDP Education, ticker code IEL. This one picked by Gary. Does offer those student placements here, also New Zealand, UK, North America as well. However, we're just speaking of regulatory risk. Potentially that's an issue in Canada where it perhaps facing further tightening and changes to policy there in Canada as far as foreign students is concerned. I think might also be a potential issue here as the government looks to maybe put more of a cap on student numbers as well. So that said, Ben, what do you think of IDP?
Yeah, really interesting one here from Gary. It's not one we've owned over the last few years. Having said that, I think a lot of negative news is in the share price. As you mentioned, in Canada, they've kind of cut immigration numbers, which is a key market for IDP Education. In terms of IDP's business itself, they actually generate most of their profits from student placements, as well as the English language testing. And the English language testing is, you know, really high quality. It's been the dominant test. Looks like maybe there's a bit of competition coming from other players in the space, but the student placements is kind of the key swing factor. And it's one of these ones where it feels like we go through cycles of governments being pro-immigration, you know, international students versus, you know, we're in an election year this year. There's a lot of political pressures around it. So there is risks around volumes of international students. Having said that, IDP Education, you know, it's done really well over time. It's a pseudo market leader. And, you know, we think that at on 23, 24 times PE, which is, you know, it's historically since listing been on an average of about 40 times. That's a good margin of safety for us. And, you know, when you've got a business generating, you know, 50% return on equity or return on invested capital, healthy EBITDA margins. We've actually added a small position in this last week. So very topical. I think it's a brave buy, but I do think it is a buy.
Or at least an ad, because that's exactly what you've
an
done.
An ad, yeah, an ad.
All right.
Good way to put it.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Rudy?
I own the shares.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So that's I mean, it's a buy if you can stand the volatility in the short term. I think there's more for it needs catalyst. Yeah, I mean, everything that Ben just said is true. This is the highest quality in its sector. It's a market leader. It's in India, the UK, Canada, Australia. Unfortunately, for most of those countries, immigration has become a dirty word. It's more risk than actually actual impact. Remember when they came out in February, the share price actually rallied 10% on the day because the result was much better than expected. But that uncertainty is being played out by hedge funds and shorters. This is the second most shorted stock on the stock exchange in Australia. It's waiting for a catalyst. In very simplistic terms, previously, brokers would put valuations of $40 to the mid-30s on this one. Those valuations have come down to, let's call it, mid-20s now. The stock price is $16. Yeah? So you can see if the catalyst comes, what the upside potentially can be. It's a lot, mm-hmm. It's particularly if you start from $16. I mean. But the catalyst is probably not immediate. And that's where you have to be patient. And that's why I'm saying, if you buy now, I mean, I have other stocks in portfolio. This is a small position. Luckily, I didn't increase it as the risks were increasing. And I'm just waiting for the catalyst. The catalyst will come.
I mean, well, you had the catalyst the height of COVID. I mean, that was one of those classic COVID beneficiaries.
No, because pre-COVID, it was one of the best performers on the stock exchange as well. So it didn't need COVID. I mean, it's a great company, and it was increasing market share and new markets in general. Just that at the moment, the uncertainty is there, the shorters are there. There's every chance that in August it comes out with another great result, and it may not necessarily push the share price sustainably higher. Right? We need a general clarity on what governments in basically the UK, Canada, and Australia are going to do with the students. That clarity will come at some point, and then the share price will be ready to rally. But in the meantime, I think patience is required. But in the meantime, the share price does look extremely undervalued.
Yep.
So if you can stomach the volatility and you have the patience, by all means, add it in your portfolio and just wait for things to come.
All right. But I think we're calling it a double buy.
Yeah, but I already own it.
There you go. We're holding it, but you're also maybe willing to buy it, at least add, as Ben said there. So that's certainly one for our investment committee to consider, which is IDP Education. All right, let's move on. Our next one, back into discretionary spending with corporate travel management. This one picked by Kim. Although interesting, it has recently lost some market share, particularly in Australia and New Zealand, while its peers tend to be growing potentially faster. Also has a stake in the US at the same time. Rudy, when you look at those travel stocks, how does corporate travel stack up then?
It has a problem in the governance department. I mean, years ago, it attracted the short report, and the short report basically discovered that it had listed all these offshore offices that basically were not populated. There was no one there, which was very shameful to have that being discovered by shorters. They sort of brushed that away as an oversight. But more recently, they've been talking up a contract, a big contract they have in the UK. And the contract is basically not the way they talked it up. And the latest I picked up is that the UK is walking back from that Australian solution where they basically put immigrants and fly them off to Rwanda. I think that's the contract that Corporate Travel had for the UK government. So a lot of questions. I think as a company, how you communicate with the share market, to me, is also very important. It gives away the quality of the company. The way they communicate with the market, I think, offers a lot of question marks. Since I have alternatives in the likes of Webjet and maybe even in Hello World, I would prefer to go to Webjet. I'm not necessarily on board with Flight Centre, but I don't have to particularly pick Corporate Travel, so I would prefer Webjet at this point, which I think is a much better communicator, and also probably at this point in time a much better risk reward proposition.
What would you do with Corporate Travel though?
I would switch into Webjet.
You'd sell it?
Yeah, I would switch into Webjet. As I said, much better risk reward.
Okay, Ben.
Yeah, I don't love the business model. It seems to live and die by these kind of lumpy contracts. The UK, as Rudy mentioned, $25 million of EBITDA, which they just lost. Stock got punished accordingly. And also just kind of Corporate Travel more broadly. I just have questions over, you know, long term, since the pandemic, if the shifting dynamics in terms of Zoom.
Why jump on a plane when you can do it online?
At least will it get to the same volumes or the trajectory of volumes that it was pre-COVID? In which case, you know, do you want to be exposed to something like a Corporate Travel? As Rudy said, short report had some red flags. It does have it's founder-led business, good history of EPS growth. So it does tick some boxes for us. Having said that, I actually will echo Rudy's thoughts here. We think Webjet's the one to own. Much better business model, 50% EBITDA margins in there. Key web beds hotel aggregation business, and so it's kind of shifted from that online travel agency to the higher margin hotel aggregator. So yeah, really like Webjet here.
So once again, what would you do with Corporate Travel?
I'll sell it just for you, Andrew.
It's not for me.
He buys Webjet.
I'm switching.
Okay, all right. I get it. You're both doing the same thing. It feels like
you have to be careful because I'm going to buy you beers otherwise.
down to an Endeavour pub. Let's round it out the first half of the show with NextDC. Now, did recently announce it's undertaking a $1.3 billion capital raising proceeds, along with existing liquidity of $2.1 billion, to fund its accelerated development and fit out of its core holdings in Sydney and Melbourne, satisfying their demand in data centres. A lot of that driven now, of course, by AI. It's remaining 85% of planned and uncontracted capacity, seen by brokers as perhaps potentially giving it a huge growth runway. However, you also got to consider the costs of building these data centers. Ben, what's your view?
Yeah, it's been a really strong performer, particularly over the last 12 months. It's just raised $1 billion. As you said, it's capital intensive to build a data center. Having said that, NextDC has done really well at, you know, fitting out their data centers, making sure they're running at good utilization, because once they can fill up, you know, 70-80% of their capacity, then they're making quite good money on each individual data center. And I suppose that's what gives it the high multiple as well, is it can provide things like cross connects, so your data can talk to the data of, you know, a big cloud provider. So it's a good business in general. Having said that, it does trade on a pretty steep valuation. It's on about 40, 45, 46 times EV to EBITDA. Global comps, Equinix 20 times, Digital Realty 22 times, Digital Bridge 30 times. And you know, it's probably too simplistic to just on a multiple basis alone call it a sell. But you know, is the upside still there at current valuations? I'd argue that they've historically raised money at or close to the top of the market previously. We actually own a small company called Global Data Center Group, GDC, that owns a stake in AirTrunk, which is, you know, all over the AFR and the press at the moment, does hyperscale data centers. And you know, we think GDC is a way to get exposure to the data center thematic, which has those tailwinds from, you know, cloud, AI, well-known trends there, but at a pretty good valuation. So I'd take profits in NextDC, I'd say.
Okay, a Truman then. Rudy?
People don't understand NextDC.
Why?
Because it's an infrastructure play and they think of it as a terms of a normal business.
Mm.
And one of the best performers on the stock exchange for the past two decades has been Transurban. And Transurban for a very long time was never profitable, traded on PEs of 40 to 60, and people were constantly saying it's too expensive. I mean, that's not how infrastructure stocks work. But I bought this one at $4 and I recently talked to my delight, so stockbroker Morgan's making a prediction that this stock could reach $40 in the years ahead. So I'm not selling, right? And I advise everyone who's in the stock to take up the share placement, which is until next week. And I do think that this stock, at the very least, mid-20s, $30. And the reason is very simple. The demand for data centers and for data is at a level that we seldom see in history, that a certain product, in this case, storage rooms for data, is that strong that you just have to be in the right place. And NextDC is basically the right business in the right place. The reason why the PE, there is not a PE because it's not profitable officially, but the reason why the multiples are high is very simple. It's a better business and it grows faster.
Mm.
You pay for quality. I have little doubt. See, the whole thing about NextDC is not what it costs to build a new data center. And that is now exceeding the $1 billion for the hyperscaler ones. It's how much return they get out of that. And they are very comfortable that their return will be in the double digits. You know why? Because the demand is so high. I mean, they can't build them quickly enough. If you listen to Morningstar would say, this business has no moat. I go like, you're living in the 19th century. I mean, the fact that you have to spend $1 billion to fit out the data center, apart from the fact that obviously you have to you find your location, all of that, that is your moat.
But it's not the only one doing it. So, you know, Ben's mentioned Global Data Centers, GDC.
Yes.
You've got Goodman, for instance.
Yeah, but that's not the same. Goodman is building data centers for others. This one is a data center that builds for itself.
Mm.
So it's not quite the same. Yes, they have the same dynamic, but it's not quite apples for apples. So the pure play, because the other company you can throw in, which I think is a much better play than the one put forward by Ben, is Macquarie Technology, which is, again, it's not a pure play, but there's enough data centers in there now. And they also recently did a placement.
Yep.
And it's because they all need capital and they're all going to invest that capital and they will that capital will have a return. The reason why NextDC has performed so well is because that it's a super cycle. And until data centers will be commoditized, and at the current projections, that's not going to happen anytime soon, you just own the shares and you just let the dynamics come through.
So your call is?
Buy, buy, buy.
Buy.
And take up, if you own it, take up the extra shares.
Okay, a double buy from Rudy himself. All right, let's sum up where we've been for the first half of the show. Then we began with our stock of the day, Brambles, the pallet business. And Rudy saying, look, it is a defensive stock. Ben agrees there. Although Ben notes could miss guidance there. Interesting that we've got a diversity of opinion here. So Rudy likes it. He's got a buy, whereas Ben would sell it. The stocks as picked by you, Domino's. Well, yeah, we began negatively there because it's a double sell from both our experts. Ben pointing out the troubled overseas expansion, particularly we've seen in Japan for the company. He prefers Collins Foods. Endeavour Group, We've got a buy from Rudy, a hold from Ben. Rudy's saying, look, the regulatory risk, particularly over the pokies business there for the hotels, essentially priced in. Once again, he sees it as a defensive stock. IDP Education. Now, Ben's got a buy on it, or at least an ad, saying that a lot of the negative news has been priced in. Pointing out it's doing healthy in terms of its metrics, particularly EBITDA. Rudy actually owns it, and he's although waiting for the next catalyst there. So it is a double buy essentially for IDP Education. Different story from Corporate Travel. It is a double sell. Rudy's troubled by its corporate governance. Ben pointing out lumpy contracts, and both would prefer Webjet. And finally, the next EC. Yep, Ben's willing to trim it, whereas Rudy is all in. He's buying XDC. All right, let's catch up with our portfolio. It's our own high conviction fund, picked by our investment committee. The latest episode of the committee is live here to watch at ausbiz.com. So in terms of the update, going into April, Campify was sold. Woolies in at 5% weighting. Soul Patts and Macquarie trimmed by 2%. And BHP increased by 2%. Checking in on its performance thus far, it is up more than 28.5% on a cumulative return basis since its inception in March 2022. So keep your requests coming in. Keep the call switched on to see which stocks our committee will be looking at next. Well, next we're going to take a look at, on the show, BHP, Vulcan Energy, Mass Group, Metcash and SEEK. We were just talking about BHP being added to the portfolio there. Let's go there then. And in fact, well, its most recent result, copper and iron ore came in line with market expectations. Coal, though, was a big miss, down 9%. It is, of course, the biggest listed stock. A lot of this depends on those, well, it all depends on those, where those commodity prices are going, in particular what we're seeing in China at the moment. All right, Ben, give us your read then on BHP.
An interesting stat I was reading recently in terms of BHP's copper. So obviously the iron ore is well known, but the copper exposure for BHP, it's about 30% of earnings projected over the next few years. And in 2024, they are projected to be the largest single company producer of copper globally, overtaking Codelco and Freeport marginally, which I think is, you know, it kind of highlights the shift in BHP's business, where they're investing in these future-facing commodities, copper, nickel, potash. They've got a monster project there in Canada. The nickel's obviously not done well, but, you know, it's quite small relative to the rest of the business. And, you know, Olympic Dam, uranium has even been talked about recently. So it's a whole broad-based exposure to the commodities complex, but it is still heavily reliant on iron ore prices, which, you know, it's always hard to predict exactly where they're going to go. People, analysts calling them back to $60 a ton have been wrong for a couple of years now. And it looks like they're, you know, holding up well, even after the recent pullback. So look, 5% fully franked yield, decent exposure to commodities in general. We own it underweight relative to the index, but you know, it's a massive position in the index. So, you know, in the low $40, I think it's a buy. Recently traded at $50, and that's probably about the mark, I think, that you look to take profits in it. So,
but you're more convinced of the copper side of the business rather than the iron ore?
Well, I think the iron ore will do well. It still generates good earnings, especially WA iron ore. Some of the operations there are just mind-boggling in terms of how large the infrastructure is. But I think the copper is also kind of an added growth option for investors, given the strength in copper prices. So overall, I think it's a buy.
Rudy, do you agree?
Business-wise, Rio Tinto will offer more to copper and aluminium than BHP does. But that doesn't mean that BHP is different, it's going to lose out. BHP has potash, of course, coming up on the horizon. I think it's, long story short, I think it's a hold at best. I mean, the fact that iron ore is holding up better than expected is not necessarily a blueprint for the future, but there's always that question mark. Iron ore. Copper will come through at some point. and potash will come through, but I think that's still a few years out. In the meantime, I don't think we should expect anything spectacular from BHP. Bond yields higher, market flows into resources. That's what we have seen happening recently. I don't think that's a sustainable story for 2024 either. I think nothing spectacular here. Hold best.
Okay, that is the view on BHP. Let's stay in the material space and head to Vulcan Energy. It is lithium vector, developing the world's first and what it calls the only zero carbon lithium process, planning to produce battery grade lithium hydroxide from geothermal brines pumped from wells used by, well, it's a renewable geothermal energy byproduct with its base in Germany. So does that make sense, Rudy, and overall, given also where the lithium market is at the moment, how do you view Vulcan?
So we go from one extreme to the other. Mm. I believe that BHP is the largest resources company in the world, and I'm not sure whether Vulcan is the smallest, but it would not be far off from the bottom. I think what BHP spends annually on organizing its AGMs is probably the market cap of Vulcan, something along those lines. I mean, the one thing that Vulcan has going for it, it's small. The share price is not very high compared to where it was. And history tells you that maybe that's when you have to start paying attention to resources, so especially those smaller cap ones. Because I think the term investing is used quite liberally around the market. I wouldn't use that for something like Vulcan Energy, because there's no saying what the share price will be in 3 to 5 years' time. Can it rally in the short term? It can. If you find enough people putting money in there, it will. But I think, fair to say, I don't see a sustainable recovery for lithium on the imminent horizon. It'll happen at some point. That's how commodities work. I mean, scraping along the bottom, at some point the dynamics change. But if it comes to having an investment and having to have patience and enduring volatility in the meantime, I think there's quite a number of other alternatives available that I would prefer above something like that. I would really berate myself if I would own this one and then lose money on it.
So that's an avoid then from you.
That's not even looking at it.
Okay, don't even consider it.
If you want to go in sector like this, why wouldn't you go for companies that offer a little bit better risk reward profile, like for example a Pilbara, or some of the other ones that are a little bit larger, actually producing, and they give you like margins, productions, and etc. This one is basically finger in the air.
The zero carbon.
Yeah, but we can all say that on paper. Yeah, right? Haven't seen that yet.
So what, you regard that as a marketing ploy that's not working?
At this point in time, it is a marketing ploy.
Okay, Ben.
I've been looking forward to discussing this one with Rudy especially. Yeah, it's one we've been, we've owned since 2019, 2020, since about 40 cents. They did a placement at 40 cents, I remember. And the share price just went, through the roof. Went up to as much as $15. And it's come, it's given up a lot of those gains. It's back at $3 and change now. We like lithium as a sector in general. In our large cap portfolio, we own Pilbara Minerals. And this is a really interesting project. We actually, we catch up with management fairly regularly. Chris Moreno, the CEO, is a really impressive operator. And it's an interesting project. It does have the zero carbon angle. And for a brine project, which is pretty poorly understood in terms of institutional investors, they prefer the hard rock operations because it's similar to, Western Australian mining. It's easier to model. These brine projects do have higher capex but lower opex, so once they're in production they're a lower cost producer typically. And with Vulcan, because they've got that zero carbon angle, they've been applying for some government funding, which it sounds like that's all moving in the right direction, and also the rest of their financing is kind of going on at the moment, and we'd expect you know, given the project is kind of de-risked somewhat by the demonstration plant producing first lithium concentrate, that we'd expect that to kind of keep moving in the next 12 months. So although the share price has come back a long way, we think this is one where, you know, you can zig while everybody else is zagging. And, you know, once these guys get into production, they'd potentially be a very low cost producer of zero carbon lithium with, you know, investors and offtakes, some of the largest auto manufacturers. Stellantis is a key shareholder. So yeah, we think the people are really good. The project's misunderstood, and yeah, it's a buy for us.
There you go. Maybe that was a shot at you there. Misunderstood, Rudy.
No, they're still cyclical.
Okay. All right. So Ben is buying the story. He's buying the stock, unlike Rudy, for Vulcan Energy. Let's move on now to Mass Group, and it's a construction materials equipment service provider, diversified in civil infrastructure, mining, real estate, and the like. All right, Ben, give us your view then on Mass.
Yeah, it's sort of a three-pronged business: construction materials, equipment hire, and some real estate, predominantly resi real estate. And I actually recall meeting with the founder, Wes Mars, who is of rugby fame, I believe, a Rabbitohs player. Yeah. Not that being from Melbourne, I follow the rugby too closely myself, but really good operator, owns a big chunk of the stock, over 50%. And yeah, I recall meeting with him and his team probably a couple of years ago now. And yeah, it's around there, sort of 2022, share price is about $2.50. And I thought it was really interesting. It's got some good land value in their real estate division, which, you know, was kind of underpinning the share price at those levels.
In fact, it's just picked up three hard rock quarries in Victoria.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they're expanding to Victoria because they're primarily based out of Dubbo in New South Wales. So they're kind of trying to dominate that regional market. Just zooming out in terms of the building materials market, that's been quite hot recently, with takeover bids for CSR, Adbri, and Boral. So potentially earnings have kind of bottomed in that sector from a cyclical standpoint. And, you know, Mars Group would benefit from that. But it's on about, you know, eight times EV to EBITDA, 15, 16 times PE, I believe. So I think the easy money's been made in this one, back at kind of in the $4. And it's, you know, it is still a cyclical player. It does pay a dividend and seems to be a, you know, solid growing business, but I don't think there's enough upside there to warrant a buy. So I'll call it a hold.
Okay, ready?
Did you also notice how he pronounces the name? It's Mars.
Mars.
It's Dutch, right? Yeah. That's a big river in Holland, by the way. Small caps are still not catching up with large cap, but you see there's exceptions, and this is one of the exceptions. And I think it hasn't been listed for that long, from memory maybe 4 years or so. But it has made all the right impressions over that time, and it probably is developing as one of those higher quality players in that sector. But having said all that, I have to agree with Ben. I think that where the share price is, I mean, I think a lot of that looks priced in. And if you want to get on board on this one, I think it's probably best to wait for a pullback at some point. They always come.
Yep.
You just wait long enough.
All right. So a double hold then for Mars Group. All right. Let's move on to Metcash, back into retail essentially as a wholesale distributor, marketing independent retailer services company, particularly with IGA. All right, and also there's a focus now on hardware, which is regarded by brokers as been a good source of growth there, particularly it's picked up Total Tools. Rudy?
Yes, the defensives are very popular today. This is actually, I think it needs to be pointed out. This is a remarkable turnaround story. If you would have asked me a couple of years ago, I would have said, they're just going to be squeezed between Aldi, Coles, and Woolies in this. Simply, they're on the way out. and they've successfully, literally successfully turned that around, also helped a little bit by COVID. But as you said, I mean, what Woolies couldn't do is going in competition with Bunnings. Mm. They've done successfully, and they've built really a very well balanced defensive business there. So again, I mean, you can choose between Endeavor, Brambles or Metcash, but every portfolio needs a bit of defensives in there. There's no reason why that wouldn't be Metcash. It pays a higher dividend. Clearly, I mean, you're still counting on the same dynamics as Go with Woolies and with the West Farmers. I mean, Bunnings, etc. And Bunnings is doing very well, so I can only assume that their corresponding business is doing well. And supermarkets, well, I mean, we're all complaining about Coles and Woolies. I don't think these guys were called in front of the Senate committee, but it's steady as she goes. I mean, it's the part of the business that where you collect the dividends twice a year, and the share price over time is just not running, but walking to a higher level.
Mm. All right, we're a little confused there with the chart, which was the previous one, but...
Nobody's noticed that. I didn't mention it.
So, sorry, your call is then?
It's a hold.
A hold.
It's a very steady hold.
Ben?
Yeah,
Ben likes small caps.
I do like small caps, but having said that, we just recently added Woolworths on the share price pullback that they had. And I think the reason you'd be in these supermarkets is... Yeah, it's a defensive exposure in portfolios, and you know, between Coles and Woolies, they've kind of got a foothold on all the key locations.
Well, they've got the foot on the throat of the consumer. That's what they got.
Well, look, that's a discussion which I'm sure we'd go well over time if we
and the producers, I should add. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't everything brown onions at the automatic checkout?
So look, I don't see any reason why you don't Metcash. Having said that, yeah, they have done well in the turnaround phase through their supermarket brands, IGA. Hardware's doing all right, Mitre 10, Home Hardware there. But look, I think when Woolworths has pulled back 10 or 15%, and from the hardware perspective, I still think it's hard to go past Bunnings, even if Wesfarmers has kind of rallied quite strongly. I think you'd be better off owning Woolworths for supermarket exposure and Wesfarmers for kind of hardware conglomerate exposure. And IGA and supermarkets, they don't have the same growth upside that, you know, you can rest assured you'll get your fully franked dividend from Woolworths. And despite the noise in the media and in the Senate, you know, we think that they're still a good business model and will continue to kind of grow earnings over the long term. So I'd say Metcash is a sell or a switch into Woolworths.
Okay.
I agree about the Woolworths, by the way. I'm shareholder in Woolworths as well.
Right.
It's undervalued here. A lot of noise.
Yeah.
Share price is cheap. It'll perform.
Yeah, it has been savage recently, particularly politically. All right. Let's round it out then with Seek in the employment services space. It is an online employment marketplace in Australia and New Zealand, also presence in Southeast Asia, also Latin America as well. And I guess we'll have to take a look at the economy, the jobs market, factor that all in. Ben, how do you view Seek?
I think there's two key points to make with Seek, one being the core classifieds business. Which, in my view, I don't think it's got the same dominance that it does or that it had over the last previous 5 years, over, you know, the most recent few years. You look at things like LinkedIn, very easy to advertise jobs there. It's got your profile, it's got your resume pretty much built in. You can message, it's a good platform. Having said that, Seek does kind of have the incumbent advantage where all, like probably most jobs are still posted on Seek, even if they're on multiple platforms. So it's probably a stable business, but it's not a high growth business for mine. If you look at operating cash flow in the most recent 12 months to December 2023, it's 131 million. Go back a few years and that was 144 million. So, you know, earnings have kind of gone nowhere, at least from a cash flow perspective over the last few years. I think classifieds, you'd probably be better off owning a realestate.com, a car sales, or even a PEXA. And my second comment to make on Seek is that they've got this growth fund venture capital style vehicle, which it just raises questions for me. Going back to IDP Education, which we talked about earlier in the program, that was actually spun out of Seek in 2015 at $2.65 per share. It's now $16. So it's gone a long way up since they sold out. But basically, Seek has this collection of kind of classifieds and Xiaopin and other assets that they put in this Seek Growth Fund vehicle. The old CEO is managing it at, you know, a generous fee, it has to be said. I think there was $20 million worth of management expenses associated with that vehicle, which is not nothing compared to, you know, Seek's profit. And yeah, on 35 times PE, I think it's priced like it's the growth stock of 10 years ago and not the low to no growth stock that it is today. So sell.
A sell, and there are the reasons why, Rudy.
It's a bit harsh, I think. It's a bit harsh. A few months ago when it was at $19, I said it was a screaming buy. It was a screaming buy. Even today, it's a lot higher. I think in comparison, I mean, I do not necessarily disagree with Ben fundamentally, but I think in comparison with car sales and REA Group, Seek basically has more competition to deal with. And that just, you see that. And there's probably also an argument to be made that job advertisements are more cyclical than housing in Australia. You can almost argue whether housing is actually cyclical in this country.
Yeah, apparently not.
And obviously the direct extension of housing is the buying and selling of cars, in particular second-hand cars. So, I mean, I own REA and Carsell, but I do not own at this point in time Seek. But I do think Ben is a bit too harsh, I think. I think what we have to take into account is that they might be scraping the cyclical bottom here in terms of their job advertisements. And I think the negativity around, if Ben hadn't put it forward, I would have said like IDP Education came out of Seek. I mean, it went to $40 almost at some point. And no doubt they have more of that type of businesses in there. So you can take a negative or a positive view on the fact that they actually have an investment portfolio. In the right time, if you see capital markets recover, et cetera, then they will get the benefits just like Macquarie has. So I think Seek looks more like a buy than a sell here, to be honest, on the expectation that at some point the cycle will turn. And I don't think the share price will go back to $20 or below, because the market is anticipating that turnaround at some point.
There you go. There's another market. A sell from Ben and a buy from Rudy for Seek. Let's round out the second half of the show then, beginning with the biggest of them all, BHP. Ben, certainly like the future facing aspect, particularly with its copper business there. He's got a buy on the stock. In fact, Seneca own it. Rudy's seeing more potential with Rio as far as copper is concerned. He's got a hold on the stock. Vulcan Energy, another one that Seneca owns. Ben has a buy on it. Does believe in lithium, even at these low levels for the price of lithium. Rudy, though, a very different story. He would run a mile from Vulcan Energy. Does not believe that story. Maas Group there. It is a double hold from both there. Ben pointing out it's got some good land value on top of the business there as well. Although Rudy maybe would potentially wait and refer a potential buy for the stock. Metcash, it's a hold from Rudy, a good defensive business, he says, and agrees with Ben. They actually prefer Woolies in that space. Ben would sell Metcash to buy Woolies. And finally there, Seek, a sell from Ben and a buy from Rudy. There we have the show. Ben, thanks for joining us from Seneca. You did well for your first show. You were treated kindly, I can say, from Rudy.
No, pleasure, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
And Rudy, yeah, you did play nice. I'll give you that. Thanks for joining us from Penn Arena.
My pleasure.
All right, that is
our
show.
I'm a nice guy.
Yeah, we're yet to be convinced. All right, any stocks you'd like us to cover, you go to ausbiz.co/corepix or write us on X at AusbizTV. Thanks for watching The Core.